Some domestic extremists are likely willing to shift to foreign terrorist ideologies as a way to justify violence due to their susceptibility to radicalization, existing violent tendencies, and willingness to support extremist groups. An NJOHSP review found that many domestic extremists and foreign terrorist ideologies share similar viewpoints typically rooted in hatred and intolerance.
This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Welcome back to Intelligence Unclassified, a podcast about counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. Join us as we talk to local and national experts in these fields to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on current trends and issues facing our great state. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed, iTunes, or Google Play. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website, www.njohsp.gov.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Intelligence Unclassified. I'm Dylan. I'm an intelligence analyst here at NJOHSP, and I'm joined by my colleague, Matt, who's also an intelligence analyst. And today we're going to talk about a product that our office recently put out called Domestic Extremists Embrace Foreign Terrorist Ideologies. The overview of the intelligence product is about specific individuals who started out associating with domestic extremist ideologies and eventually conducted attacks on behalf of foreign groups such as ISIS or Al-Qaeda. We've seen a few interesting cases over the last few years of domestic extremists embracing those ideologies. And as we are all aware by now, foreign terrorist organization ideologies justify violence to further their causes. Matt, can you talk about some of the domestic extremist ideologies that justify violence?
Yeah, Dylan. So with our office, we look at numerous domestic extremist ideologies, and we rank them at either a high, moderate, or low level. For today's podcast, I'm just going to go over the moderate level ones, which include anarchist extremist, militia extremist, sovereign citizen extremist, and white supremacist extremist. And over the last year, individuals associated with these ideologies have engaged in some type of violent or extremist action in furtherance of their ideology. So to begin with anarchist extremists, the most recent incident of them engaging in some type of extremist or violent action actually occurred back in November, relatively close to New Jersey. So in November, there was a rally in Philadelphia where individuals affiliated with anarchist extremists maced, punched, and kicked U.S. Marine Corps reservists who were not affiliated with an event at the rally. However, they perceived them as Nazis and white supremacists, and they engaged in that violence because of their belief system going towards that. For militia extremists, the most recent incident of them engaging in some type of violent incident was actually in March of 2017, where individuals affiliated with the White Rabbit 3%er militia threw an improvised explosive device into a mosque in Minnesota in an attempt to drive what they said Muslims out of the country. Additionally, a month later, the same group attempted to do the same type of bombing at an abortion clinic. However, the improvised explosive device did not detonate. And then for sovereign citizen extremists, one of our other moderate threat groups, they do have a propensity for violence. And over the past few years, they have been known to threaten law enforcement and even attack them in either traffic stops or other situations in the real world where they are faced with the law enforcement presence. Moving on, for the white supremacist extremists, again, these individuals have engaged in racially motivated violence as well as extremist incidents against other people. One of the most recent incidents actually occurred over in California, where an individual who believed in this white supremacist ideology attacked a synagogue in Poway, killing one individual for his ideology. So bringing it back, as we can see, that all the groups that we rank moderate in the ideologies, they've engaged in some type of extremist content or violent action. So going back to the product you discussed, Dylan, I see you have domestic extremists embrace foreign terrorist ideologies due to their ability to justify violence and susceptibility to radicalization. Are you seeing a lot of case studies in the U.S. with individuals who were extremists at one point moving towards this ideology because of their violent tendencies?
Yeah, Matt, so the point of the product is to discuss how some domestic extremists have embraced those foreign terrorist ideologies in order to justify their violence. So in regards to the product, we highlight three cases that we saw since 2014, one of them being last year. Corey Johnson, we actually discuss him in our threat assessment as well. He went to an overnight party for a friend's birthday, 13-year-old, and Johnson stabbed and killed one and injured two at the sleepover party. And he claimed that he carried out the attacks because of his Muslim faith and that one of the victims offended his religious beliefs. Prior to the attack, Johnson had been viewing different terrorist propaganda videos as well as showing support for Anwar al-Awlaki. But prior to actually conducting the attack and viewing the foreign terrorist propaganda, Johnson's sister told school officers that he actually was a white supremacist who admired Adolf Hitler. And according to law enforcement, Johnson was fascinated with dictator figures similar to Adolf Hitler and as well as the Ku Klux Klan. So prior to actually conducting that attack, claiming that it was for his Muslim beliefs, he seemed to have an affinity with white supremacist extremism. The next case that we're going to look at is Zale Thompson. He was in New York City. It was pretty popular in the news. The authorities said that Thompson viewed videos relating to ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and Al-Shabaab, as well as other beheading videos. Zale Thompson, he targeted and wounded two police officers with a hatchet in New York City. And on social media, he described white Christians as aggressive and violent. And after the attack, former FBI Director James Comey stated that Thompson was inspired from foreign terrorist groups like ISIS, but there was also evidence that he focused on black separatist ideologies. So those are two cases of race-based ideologies that have crept into foreign terrorist supporting individuals to sort of justify the violent attacks, right? We saw Corey Johnson had that affinity for Adolf Hitler and the KKK, but conducted the violence on behalf of his faith. We saw Zale Thompson, who may have found inspiration from black separatist ideologies, but he was viewing ISIS and Al-Qaeda videos as well. And then the third case that we want to talk about is an individual named Devin Arthurs, and he was probably the most notable case for a domestic extremist embracing a foreign terrorist ideology. So, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about Devin Arthurs? I know you've been following his case a lot, especially his affiliations with white supremacist extremists prior to sort of consuming the foreign terrorist Salafi jihadism.
So, yeah, Dylan, Devin Arthurs is actually a pretty interesting case when it comes to what we're discussing here, how domestic extremists are embracing this foreign terrorist ideology. So prior to his arrest, Devin Arthurs was an avowed neo-Nazi and part of a militant neo-Nazi extremist group called the Adam Waffen Division. He was a member of this, and he self-described himself as a leader as well. So Devin and an individual named Brandon Russell formed this group online and then quickly moved it out to the real world. And what makes Adam Waffen Division so prevalent is their extremist message. They're very violent in their inherent message of pushing this white supremacist ideology, and they advocate for violence against all their different targets. So after becoming a member of this group and forming it throughout the United States, at some point Devin Arthurs converted to Islam and began to support foreign terrorist organizations such as ISIS. In May of 2017, after Arthurs had moved into an apartment in California with Russell as well as two other members of the Adam Waffen Division, he was arrested for holding several people at gunpoint and taking them hostage in a store not too far from the apartment. And he said the reason why he did this is because of military actions against individuals in the Middle East, and he felt like he needed to go and hold people hostage as a result of this. So after his arrest by police from that incident, they went to his apartment. They found that he had shot and killed two of his roommates because, per what he said, they disrespected his Muslim faith. So with all that being said, you can really see how this is an interesting case because you have an individual who believes in this extremist white supremacist ideology switch over to a Salafi jihadist extremist version and start conducting violence and spouting rhetoric based on that.
So we see that Devin Arthurs was a member of Adam Waffen Division, where our office typically describes them as a militant type organization. But it seems that Arthurs didn't really conduct violence until he was able to shift to that Salafi jihadism ideology. So we see in these three cases that these individuals have had some sort of affinity or association to domestic extremist ideologies, but they do these violent incidents and attacks on behalf of their Salafi jihadist ideologies. So that's really what the product aims to discuss. It aims to discuss how domestic extremists may shift to those foreign ideologies in order to conduct the violence and to justify it. So what I would like to talk about now is I would like to sort of compare some of these similarities and differences in the ideologies so that we can maybe describe why these individuals are drawn to each ideology and then have that fluidity and that ability to switch into a different ideology in order to conduct violence. I know the various Salafi jihadist groups, like let's say ISIS, they believe in sort of their own supremacy, right? So ISIS believes that, you know, they want to create that Islamic state for all Muslims that they claim. Matt, I know that you could probably talk a little bit about how the white supremacist extremists sort of view similar ideology, right? Where, you know, ISIS will push that the West wants to destroy Islam. Isn't there like a term that you guys have talked about in your product about the white supremacist belief that's kind of similar?
Yeah, so like how ISIS wants to declare its own caliphate and have its own land and run under its own laws, a lot of white supremacists believe the same thing. They want to create like a white ethno-state where it's all white people for white people and it's under laws and systems that are only run by them and there are no other individuals who are either non-white or foreigners in there. One of the biggest things they use to kind of push this ideology is the white genocide conspiracy theory. And in this, they believe that cultural assimilation or individuals from other countries immigrating here or interracial marriage will slowly start to have the white race become extinct. So they're really using this to leverage individuals' fears that if they don't do something now and they don't act to create this white ethnostate, at some point in the near future, the white race is going to cease to exist. One of the same things that you tend to see from a lot of foreign terrorist organization ideologies, where if we don't do something now, if we don't act at this moment, then we're going to cease to exist and a different culture or different way of life is going to slowly take over.
So I know that Robert Bowers, the individual who conducted that attack in Pittsburgh targeting a synagogue, I know he posted on social media prior to the attack something along the lines of this white genocide theory. What exactly did he post, Matt?
Bowers posted online that there was this specific Jewish organization that was, as he quoted, bringing in invaders from foreign countries, and that he couldn't sit by and watch these invaders slowly start to kill the white race, and that he had to go out and do something to stop them. And he posted that 2 hours before going and conducting the attack against the synagogue, because he viewed the synagogue as affiliated with that organization and that they were individuals who were bringing in these invaders. And we've really seen this over the past year or so with a lot of the attacks that have happened. One of the most infamous ones is the New Zealand mosque shooter, where he had the same type of theory. He said that prior to his attack, he actually didn't want to attack the mosques in New Zealand. However, when he was there preparing for the attack and training, he realized that there were all these invaders, as he saw them, in this predominantly white nation that he viewed it as. And he said that if I don't do something now, they're going to slowly start taking over this area. So I need to go out and I can need to conduct this attack. So he really pushed this ideology, kind of very similar to what we see with ISIS. Now, I know everybody here has a good idea, understanding of what ISIS does for its caliphate, but does ISIS use similar messaging still now to this day, or even Al-Qaeda or other groups like that, or are they kind of differing what their messaging is?
Right. So we see in the foreign terrorist group messaging is that, like you spoke on Devin Arthur's earlier about how he claimed that he needed to take those hostages at that store on behalf of U.S. military actions overseas. So ISIS and these groups sort of play like that victim card. They want people to take revenge for how the U.S. military is operating. And Devin Arthur's, you know, isn't the first person to use that as an ideology or a jumping off point to conduct that violence. So yeah, so the messaging is similar. I mean, ISIS and Al-Qaeda and groups like that, they want people to conduct violence because they push this view that the West is somehow anti-Muslim and that the West, you know, are these invaders, and they use the term crusader a lot, right? So it's just interesting how similar the messages are, right? You have, on the one hand, you have the white supremacists saying that, you know, like Tarrant in New Zealand, we're going to be wiped out by Muslims coming in, right? And then you got the Salafi jihadists on their hand saying, well, the Westerners are going to come in and they're going to ruin our way of life, right? So it's sort of like this back and forth of similar ideologies that essentially believe this similar mindset that they're somehow being infringed upon, right? Now, Matt, with the white supremacists and the white genocide theory, is there a lot of rhetoric that discusses maybe how they're not only are they we need to act now or this is going to happen? Is there a lot of talk about defending their race or these guys thinking of themselves as heroes?
Yeah, so really when it comes to the theory, like I said, it gets pushed out there that if you or I or we, if nobody acts now, something bad is going to happen. So a lot of the attackers that we've seen, they're putting out these manifestos, and in them they're saying, I need to go out. I realize that nobody's doing anything, and if I'm not doing something, then the white race is going to go extinct. So they view themselves as the hero of their people, essentially, and they really kind of push in this ideology across. One of the most prevalent examples is Dylann Roof, who in 2015 shot and killed individuals at a predominantly black church in Charleston. And what he said is that prior to his attack online, he realized that everybody who he interacted with that believed in this type of ideology that he did, they weren't doing anything. And when they weren't doing anything, nothing was going to happen, and they were going to slowly start to go extinct. So he actually said after the attack that he almost didn't kill any of the people in the church that he attended because they were so nice. However, he was so extreme in his ideology, and he believed that he had to do something, otherwise the white race would go extinct, that he ended up shooting and killing them, even though he said that he had nothing personally against any of the individuals within the church. However, he needed to ignite that race war spark, and he needed to get other people to become inspired as well.
So he felt the need to act on behalf of the ideology because he felt like other people weren't.
Exactly.
So we can see here now that we've gone over, we've talked about the similarities in the sort of messaging and the rhetoric and the ideologies that support both groups. We can see why these other domestic extremists could be susceptible to transferring ideologies, right? We see that they both push for sort of this "we're the victim" message. They both push for the white ethno state or the Islamic state. They both push for sort of that their versions or their race are better than everyone else and that they're the ones who are correct. So it does make sense that these domestic extremists might shift their ideologies to these foreign terrorist ideologies. How or why they use the shift, we assess that it's justification for that violence, right? Devin Arthurs, he claimed that it was because of military action. Well, military action tends to be violence, right? So it almost seems that he's saying it's like a quid pro quo. It's a violence for violence. That's how he was able to justify it. Corey Johnson felt that he could conduct his violence because his religion was offended, right? I mean, that's a very strong belief that he felt that his religion was offended, so he felt that he needed to conduct violence on behalf of that. So again, it shows that these individuals are already susceptible to these violent messaging and that they sort of just do this shift in order to conduct further violence, giving themselves a rationale. So I would also bring up the point of how these domestic extremists we've also seen have branched out to create their own groups because they felt like there wasn't enough action taking place. So again, that's just another example of how these individuals can feel sort of disillusioned by the ideology that they initially took on and that they might adopt another one. Matt, do you have an example of a white supremacist extremist or any domestic extremist for that matter who may have actually left their already extremist group to form a more extreme group?
Yeah, so that's not a new thing. You tend to see that a lot of times, that people who have these violent tendencies, they join this ideology or they join a group and because they want to further that violence and they want to further that cause, but they realize like this group's either not doing anything or they're not violent enough. So that's why they really tend to shift from that to either a new group or a different ideology. One example for a New Jersey Nexus is an individual named Joshua Stever, who was the founder and leader of Aryan Strike Force, which was an international white supremacist organization that was based out of New Jersey. So Stever grew up surrounded by this white supremacist ideology, and once he hit a certain age, he joined a pretty well-known white supremacist organization. However, when in there, he realized that this group really isn't who I want to be. They're not doing what I want them to do. I want to be more violent. I want to push more of my focus to something else. So that's when he splintered off from that, and he formed his own group out of that. And you see a lot of his propaganda actually has the name Aryan Strike Force embedded within that organization's name to kind of show like he spawned out of that group to point out, I was once this, now I'm moving on to something new to push my ideology to where I want it to be. And he amassed, like I said, a lot of followers, both within New Jersey, within the United States, and internationally.
So, you know, with these individuals that we have here in the product, like Corey Johnson, Devin Arthurs, and Zale Thompson, it's not much of a leap for these individuals who are grasping to find maybe a more extreme ideology or extreme group to latch onto, right? You talked about Josh Stever, who felt that his group wasn't extreme enough, so he needed to find a more extreme group. We could see this as justification, where maybe these guys like Devin Arthurs aren't going to see themselves as doing enough action, so they jump to that foreign terrorist ideology so that they can justify that violence. So we talked about the product. It's titled Domestic Extremists Embrace Foreign Terrorist Ideologies. It's available on our website at njohsp.gov. And also, please feel free to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified for additional information regarding domestic and extremist terrorist groups. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Intelligence Unclassified, signing out.
All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.